Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm honored that I'm joined by Mr. Victor Hugo and Mr. Philippe Costa. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure, sir.
I know. Philippe, you don't get to do as many podcasts as Victor. I've been seeing Victor do a lot of Flow Institute podcasts. Ones where you get in there and you're talking about culture and identity and what it means to create a gym and really create a brand. And I find it fascinating The same levers that we've pulled to build Power Athlete are the same ones that you have created with Flow. You know, you create the brand, you create the identity. You know, what are the pillars and what are the things that like the company stands upon? And what do you believe and what do you want to extend to your clients? And what helps them identify with these things?
Yeah, it's so easy when somebody has done it before. You just got to copy, right?
Well, like I always think if you have to reinvent the wheel, you're going to take a long fucking time. You know, look at what somebody does and then do it better.
No, I think like you said, like it's been great. It's definitely new, right? It started like as a small school and now we have this vision of like growing, have way more people than we had when it started. So, you know, the stakes are higher, but it feels cool. You know, it's a cool responsibility. And for sure, seeing the work you do with Power Athlete is pretty cool too, because everywhere I go, that's the identity, right? A lot of times when I'm teaching a seminar, there's one guy that knows you and he's wearing the rash guard and stuff. So it's like, it's cool to have, you know, for me to have the opportunity to, you know, learn from you, from Shanji, for these people that have been running their groups for a long time. And, you know, you guys have been in a position of leadership for a long time too. So it's a fulfilling thing, you know?
So when you come to America, I mean, obviously you come for jiu-jitsu and you work as a, you know, I guess you could say like a teaching black belt, or you came here with your brown belt.
Purple.
Oh, you came here as a purple belt. You came as a...
As a brown belt.
As a brown belt. All right. So you come here, you come to San Diego, and as you're going through this kind of like maturation process to be good at jiu-jitsu, was there ever an idea that one day you wanted to open your own gym?
Not really. It's when you're young, you're not really thinking about those things. I just went to compete, train, sleep, and repeat. But over the years, you know, Alex was the guy that helped me a lot. Kind of like get that started. You know, he picked on me a lot. Like, hey, you got to learn to do things. Saulo as well. At first, it's more like it's a duty. Like, I didn't want to do it. But as I got better, it was like, oh, this is actually an interesting skill to have. And as I traveled, I got to, you know, practice that a little bit. And people were like, oh, you're really good at teaching and stuff. So I was like, oh, I'm not really trying to do that right now. But it's comforting to know that, you know, people can understand my teaching. But yeah, as I got black belt and as I started getting hurt, but right as we met, that opened my eyes more to like, what do we do after, right? Because I think we talked a lot about that a lot. Like, you've been a professional athlete for a long time, and professional athletes, I think we have a hard time on letting it go sometimes. And I think you've done great after your career, but in jiu-jitsu, it's super hard. Like, people finish their careers and they don't know what they're going to do.
Sure.
So they keep competing, or, you know, like they stop doing jiu-jitsu at all. So for me, like, early as a black belt, I also, you know, start thinking about, oh, what happens when I can't compete anymore? What are the things I'm going to be doing? What am I going to be good at? Am I just going to start on those things when I can't do it anymore? That's going to be kind of late. So kind of opened my eyes to kind of like, you know, like what are the things that I can do better? And I enjoy that side too, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm always impressed by you guys. And one of the things that impressed me the most for you was the fact that you dealt with such a significant back injury for so long. Mm-hmm. And when I had made a joke, you know, Sala, or when I was joking, when I had talked to Sala, I joked with you that Sala was like, oh, he's been faking all these years. And I said to Sala, I was like, no, his back's legitimately fucked up. And he like looked at me, he's like, really? And I was like, yeah. And then when I made that joke to you, you were like, thank God that he thought that, because he pushed me.
Yeah.
And what if he had actually known I was hurt? Would he not have pushed me as hard? And I think it made me better. And you said that to me. And I had to recalibrate my thinking, because in my mind, if somebody had said that to me, I would have been like, fuck that dude. Mm-hmm. And you were like, no, he did me a solid. And I was like, God damn it. I'm like, Victor's so much more mentally and emotionally mature than I am. I'm so petty. And that was impressive for me. But also the fact that your injury was significant enough that you didn't know how long you were going to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And you had to kind of find other things. And one of the things that I thought was cool when we started training was, I was like, dude, like, you will recover from this. And I mm-hmm. think there's that feeling of like of injury where there's like a hopelessness, like it's never going to get better. And I know you worked with a lot of different people, but like, as soon as you saw that, I remember one day you were like, it doesn't bother me anymore. It doesn't hurt. And like at that point, I think at that point you just took the reins off, and that was exciting for you.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is brought to you by the Business of Strength. Imagine making this your strongest business year yet, with more revenue, better systems, and a gym that practically runs itself. Sounds like a dream. But that's exactly what the Strongest Year Project delivers. It's a 12-month mastermind for gym owners, packed with one-on-one coaching, real-world systems, bi-weekly calls, and a roadmap to transfer your business from inside and out, just like they did at Varsity House Gym. Ready to stop guessing and start growing? Go to businessofstrength.com/attend and join the Strongest Year Project today. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you pushing through performance roadblocks caused by pain or janky movement mechanics? Knock the rust off with our movement health courses, used by thousands of athletes worldwide, from average Joes to MVPs. Our courses give you the tools to assess and fix yourself so you can get back to breaking necks and cashing checks. Not convinced? Get a taste of how our courses can help you by enrolling in a free sample today. Head to powerathletehq.com and search courses from the menu. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I think one thing that I learned from you right away too was not like ignoring it, but moving past it. Because a lot of times when you have an injury that has been with you for a few years, you kind of focus on it too much. You give it too much of your attention when you could be depositing that attention on actually working on a new thing, like go learn lift weights, like as you taught me and stuff. So it gave me like a different vision. Like I didn't have to think about, oh, this is hurting because of this. No, let's work past it. Like let's work on new things. Let's get stronger. Let's work on the conditioning. Yeah. And you know, like doing the echo bike, my back never hurt. So just do that shit over and over. So it made me kind of forget about like those little things and like MRIs and shit like that. And just like focus on the actual work and move past it. You know, like I think it gave me a lot of maturity on that side.
Yeah, no, you guys are great. I still am overly impressed the fact that you guys let me do that to you. It was fucking awful. You know, one of the things which is interesting, and you guys don't fit into this, but there's a lot of shade and a lot of shit thrown at kids of your age group, kind of like your, I guess you could say demographic, your like generation.
Gen Z?
Yeah, the Gen Z. And I don't see any of that in you guys. And I don't know if it's an American thing or the fact that you guys, you know, grew up in Brazil and then came here as, you know, chasing a dream. And so it's maybe just a different mindset of how you guys grew up. You know, there wasn't a level of abundance mm-hmm. like the kids have here. Mm-hmm. And I think it made you guys hungry. I remember you were telling me you're like in Florida, Laser, there's no air conditioning. Yeah. You're like, you take like 9 showers and like just some of like the basics of what you guys talked about, like made me realize that you guys come here and it's like, you know, people don't realize how good they have it. Mm-hmm. And so whenever people shit on this generation and talk about Gen Z and this, I was like, I don't know if that's universal to say, because I know kids in this deal and they're not like that. They're hardworking. And the fact that you guys kept showing up to the point where after that 2 years between ADCCs, I sat down and I like looked at it and I was like, man, we went too fucking hard. I should have given you guys more breaks. I should have like worked in more stuff. But I felt like such a sense of urgency to get you guys and push you guys so far mm-hmm. that I think we could have done a little bit better ebb and flow instead of just gas, gas, gas. But you guys came out, man. And like, it's so exciting to see you guys compete and do. And I know you got a big one coming up and you're fighting this weekend. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying about the Gen Z stuff choosing, I think the thing that I've been lucky, and I think Felipe as well too, is like the influence from an early, you know, early age, from like being influenced by, you know, decent people. We have a friend in common, his name is Junior. He was always like the guy that gave us a vision, right? He still talks the same way. Like mm-hmm. he talks to us like like how he talked 10 years ago, like you guys have to train, you guys have to study, you guys have to, like, he repeats that over and over. But since like 18, 17, you probably earlier, we've been hearing him talk that stuff, and he's a really successful guy. So it helps, like, having that, you know,
is positive. Is this the guy influence. who kind of angeled you guys here, the fisher boat guy that I met?
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. Same thing with Philippe since early age. Always, like, of course, my parents and stuff, but having some of an outside kind of like strengthen that word helped a ton. You know, he's always like on point to that stuff. And I feel like sometimes, I was even talking to someone this week, when you're around a lot of people in your age, you're kind of like going to think about the things that they're doing, you know? So I think I've been lucky enough to always be around older guys, and like they kind of give the vision. I had a lot of fun too, but they kind of keep you like, they kind of help you keep your feet like grounded and like understand, you know, like you're not going to have your whole life to run after things. So you guys start early.
Yeah.
I think that was the difference of starting jiu-jitsu in Brazil as a young age, because whenever I started, there was no kids class, you know. So
how old were you when you started?
Nine, 10.
And you were what, 13?
I was 14.
13.
And we didn't have kids class, so we were not around kids, you know, we were on the mats with adults. And we didn't have a lot of space to talk, you know, so we would always be the ones listening and always be the one learning, you know. So then you start kind of like pick up other people's mind of like, for example, this guy, we used to train every single day. And then after the tournament, we would win a really tough division. And he would be like, oh, okay, now you can get a cup of soda, you know? And he would put us like a little cup of soda.
Philippe still wouldn't take it. I don't think I saw Philippe drink soda for like, last year or something.
Yeah. He was like, no, you guys cannot drink soda. Soda is not good for the cardio, you know? Like, you know, eat a lot of sugar. So we used to take that really
seriously. How did you survive without eating sugar all the time?
Man, that's why right now I love it, you know? So if we had a brownie right here, I would be attacking.
That's Philippe's Achilles heel of brownies.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have the Grand Prix.
Grand Prix, yeah.
Out in Costa Mesa that you're doing for Flow.
Yeah, that was like exciting one. Probably a week to go now.
Yeah.
It's an interesting bracket because now you're probably going to laugh at this. I'm 29, but I'm kind of like the older guy on the bracket now. A lot of the guys that are there in the bracket, they're younger.
Who's in the bracket?
My first match against a guy, his name is Marlon. He was recently brown belt, just got promoted to black belt. I think he's probably, 20, 19, like young guy, new blue. It's probably going to be second tournament as a black belt. Wow. So yeah, up and comer.
Is he a big guy?
No, he's small. He's like, not as small, but 88 kilo, like shorter guy.
Well, I think it's fascinating in these Grand Prix that they just throw all the weight classes in and they're like, we have this ultra named Victor, and then you're going to go against that like Fabricio guy.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like
they have a smaller guy, Pato's on a bracket too, but yeah, I have this guy first round and then it'll be fun, you know, like he's a newly promoted to black belt. 6 years ago, that was me. My first big tournament as a black belt was actually a Grand Prix as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's cool. It's cool to be in this spot too, like going against the younger guys. Like,
it's weird to say, isn't it? At 29, you're all of a sudden now an old guy.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, like I've been, because the way that works in jiu-jitsu, which is kind of similar to all the sports, is when you're in black belt, you kind of have more of the spotlight, right? They've been seeing you. So I've been a black belt for 6 years now. So these guys they're getting their black belt now. Probably when I won my first black belt title, they were like blue belts or purple belts. So they've been studying a lot of times. So you got to be ready for all those things. I'm not the guy that I'm going to like think less of them just because they got promoted. I'm actually going to respect them more because they've probably been seeing you compete for a long time. And they're probably like, oh, I see a gap there on there. So.
Well, and also the coverage for jiu-jitsu, you know, with Flow and social media is so much better now than it's been. I mean, the last 5 years. Just the fact, like I was talking to Fries, and I told him about the first time that I saw a camera fly over my head on a string, like during the NFL game. And he's like, you know, there's like 100 cameras now. Damn. And he's like, literally, they're like stringing everywhere and they're on your face and this. And I was like, man, I remember the first time I saw one and now they got a bunch. So, what's really happened in the last 5 years has just exploded. So these guys have so much more access to game tape and the ability to watch you.
Sure. Yeah, I agree, man. It's big time. And, but still, like, even though they have the access to information, I think once you get there, you play a lot too. Like they could have all your notes.
Yeah.
You still can turn it up and make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost like the same thinking that I don't know if football there is this thinking, but training is training and fighting is fighting.
Yeah.
It's different.
You know? Yeah. Private, you know, well, there's practice and then there's games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something that I've talked to you a bunch about is you can't have your best efforts in the gym. Mm-hmm. If you're in the training hall and those are like your best matches, like, no, you got to like, you know, that's something that I've known. I've seen you like, you know, maybe have some like, you know, struggles and this and the training, and then all of a sudden go in and like, dude, game time, and you fucking take it up a notch. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's the difference in football too. I mean, I played with guys that were like really good practice players, and then they didn't play good in the games. And I played other guys that were all right, and then all of a sudden they had this extra gear, and I was like, holy shit, dude, thank God I don't have to see that guy on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's quite neat, is how it works.
Yeah. I think one big thing about, like, you guys were just talking about business and bringing to jiu-jitsu. It's like, for example, Victor, he has a jiu-jitsu that it's really easy for you to reproduce, you know, it's really easy for you to do the same exactly thing as he does, you know. But the thing is, like, no one ever felt his the way that he does things, you know. So whenever like you're gonna fight him, you don't expect the strength, the weight, you know. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, I can reproduce his game in the training session, but in the comp, like, it's not gonna feel the same, you know. He's heavy, he knows how to put his hips in different directions, you know. So it's hard for you to get someone that can reproduce and you can train for that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Arash was complaining that you were like bombing him, like when you were on top, he's like, you were like twisting and throwing your body and landing on him. He's like, he was power bombing me. And I was like, well, you are a power bomber, Arash.
It was funny. We were training 2 days ago and I had Arash on my back, and he's so light now. I stood up with him on my back and he felt so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's like, should I stay here?
Well, it's like when you stood up with me and I was like, dude, don't hurt me. I was so nervous you were going
to
fucking.
So he's just stand up and like, he was like, I could like fear, you know, it's like, oh, it's too high. Mm-hmm. All right, you're light. I got to get used to the guys just stand up with you on their back and it'd be like a little monkey on their back.
What's he like 218, 220 now?
He feels really light. I think so, man.
Well, he's got hollow baby bird bones. He's got hollow baby bird bones. That's what I tell him all the time. He's got hollow baby bird bones. That was that was a joke. In football, if somebody like didn't like when you hit them, if they didn't feel heavy, it'd be like their bones are hollow. Yeah, they got baby bird bones. As you're going into this Grand Prix, so you know who's in, you know, like you understand your first fight, and then you can kind of go through and you kind of like assess each guy. How much research do you do, like game time film, watching them, trying to understand their game, so at least when you get in there, you're familiar with the individual?
So because those guys that are there, the guys that we know the most, they compete so often, you kind of have an idea what they do. But then, you know, like Shanji, and then we had Matt Chubeta too, kind of study each one of them and their games. And then this past week, all we worked on was like specific things that those guys do and trying to recreate the scenarios with like Philippe, and then we had Winston, really trying to recreate those things that the guys are really good at. And then spend some time there, see how do I solve those problems. And yeah, that's kind of like how we do it. Like, it's super helpful to have Shanji and Jubeta. They had the same report. Like, they talk about the same positions.
Haircut.
Yeah, the same haircut as well. But yeah, they came with the same ideas, and then they just put me in the situations and gave me the problem to solve. And I think that makes me confident that if I found myself in these positions there, I can solve them. So that's how it goes. But yeah, like, study is important. I think the time that I study guys the most is whenever I don't know them. But like, the guy from the first match, he competed this weekend. I watched his matches. The other two big dogs will be Pixley and Pedro Marinho, but I've seen these guys compete every time.
Yeah. Oh, are they in the Grand Prix?
Yeah, they're on the other side of the bracket, but yeah, they are in the tournament. But still, like, I could study them, but I watch jiu-jitsu. Like, I'm a guy. There's guys that I actually don't watch, but I actually like to watch jiu-jitsu because sometimes I can pick something new. I can see, you know, like, future competitor, I can see how they feel comfortable, how they feel uncomfortable. So I kind of like have an idea of their game a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've never, have you ever fought Pedro Moreno?
I fought him once, 2021.
Yeah.
It was a even match. He won me by one advantage, and it was Nogi. It was his best tournament, I think, to this day. He beat me and beat Cyborg the same tournament. And he won double gold. But yeah, that was like 4 years ago. So it's been a while. The guy that competed against him the most recently was Lovato.
Yeah.
From our team. Lovato also gave me like, he sent me like four videos, three videos.
Hey, brother. And then he leaves you a 6-minute text message.
He sent me like videos now. It's cool. Like, he sent me videos like things that he think I could do and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's helpful. That's the thing about the great thing about having a team, you know, you have so many people you can count on. And then if I have some sort of like strength and conditioning thing I can bring to you, and then Shanji can be the technical side, you know, like he's the technical mastery, and then have Lovato with the stand and the wrestling, and then Philippe can come in and do everything together.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So what's up with you? What do you got this weekend? You got a little Austin Open?
Yeah. Round Rock Sports Center. We didn't have matches on my division that is heavyweight, so I went up to ultra heavyweight, so I'm going to be representing Victor.
Uh-huh. So he is what we call, he identifies himself as an ultra heavy.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
But he's actually a heavyweight.
The artist formerly known as. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. I like it.
So, yeah, we have a joke right now in Brazil going on that is kind of like, I'm flavor. I'm flavor ultra heavyweight. Yeah, you know, I'm not ultra heavyweight, but I'm flavor ultra heavyweight.
This is like some sexual identity stuff where now you're identifying as?
Yeah.
Kind of, but.
I don't know. The one thing that blew me away when I was in Brazil, when we were in Carnival in Rio, I didn't anticipate that many cross-dressers.
Mm-hmm. Oh
like
yeah,
guys dressed as women. Mm-hmm. Like it, like I didn't know if it was just like for Carnival or what it was, but like all of a sudden I was like, these are a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
I was like in wearing like tubes, like mini skirt kind of like outfits, and I'm like, nope, these are a bunch of dudes. Look at those shoulders. And that kind of threw me for a loop. I didn't know if that was something that was.
It's
more
a big tradition for dudes to like dress as a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, and Carnival was just last week, you know.
Well,
are you still dressing up as a woman?
Ash Wednesday was yesterday. Yeah,
not anymore. I shaved my head.
Well, Ash Wednesday was yesterday. I don't know if you guys went to church. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously Carnival, you know, Fat Tuesday, Carnival was ended on Tuesday. So
yeah. But yeah, so ultra heavyweight, probably two fights in that division and then open class. You know, I want to right now get time.
Is this in the gi or no gi?
The gi.
It's in the gi.
Yeah, I want to get as much time on the mats as possible right
now.
It's
been a while since you competed in the gi, huh?
Yeah, a year now. Mm-hmm. A year. So.
Well, it's exciting that Flo and some of these other Who's Number One are actually going to start doing gi events.
Yeah.
I think that's.
Yeah, I think like they are planning on doing more. You know, I think that this last year, the competitions in the gi was actually pretty exciting. You know, I feel that people are bringing the gi back to life right now, you know, because I think here of HCC, everyone focusing on HCC, it's hard for you to do both. So most of people choose to do no gi whenever it's HCC year. And mostly that no gi got so big in the last like 4 or 5 years. So
well, I think from spectator sport, like if you're not a jiu-jitsu guy, like people like seeing the no gi. Mm-hmm. But if you do jiu-jitsu, you enjoy seeing the gi because it's so slow and technical.
Exactly. And I feel that
the majority of people train gi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what's.
I mean, unless you're like 10th planet guy or.
Yeah. Like I think no gi is growing a lot, but majority kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you add kids to the equation. There are barely kids training no gi. Exactly. Majority of kids train gi. So majority of the sport, I believe, still trains gi, right? So they can understand more gi sometimes.
Well, and especially in your business. And I think even though professional jiu-jitsu and what you guys do creates a certain, I don't know, like allure around it, or at least, you know, brings credibility to you individually, like to you guys. I mean, it's kind of like for me, you know, standing up and being like, I played a decade in the NFL gives me credibility to be a world champion and done what you guys have done. That gives you, you know, credibility. But really for your jiu-jitsu school and for the Flow Institute and Six Blades, the quality of you as a human is more important to parents who bring their kids, which is the majority of people that are really, you know, if you think about the lifeblood of like a jiu-jitsu school and like what you guys do, it's parents bringing their kids. And people like, and I know this because I take my kids to jiu-jitsu, if like they show up and the people are good people, like parents feel comfortable bringing their kids.
Yeah.
Like they don't care that somebody's a world champion or something, like if they're not a good person or they don't feel that their kids are safe.
Yeah. Good values attract good people.
Yeah.
That's,
That's kind of an interesting balance because, you know, usually a lot of good athletes tend not to be, God, how do I say this without saying it? Like in the NFL and like through professional sports, like some of the best athletes tend not to be, have like the highest moral character, right? You could say. So to meet people that have high moral character and are high level competitors, you know, becomes more and more rare.
Yeah.
So how do you balance? I mean, like, so knowing you guys as intimately as I know you guys, I mean, like, we are, like, you know, we trained almost every single day together, so I consider you guys family. And knowing that, you know, not only your families, but who you guys are as individuals, I have, like, if Arash said, hey, I'm going to pick up Cash and take him to school or take him to JITS for 3 hours, I'd have no problem having you guys take my kids and, like, watch my kids and bring them home, because I know you treat them as my own, as your own. But, like, how do you guys balance, I guess you could say, like, you know, working with kids and who you are in the sport and all that with, you know, getting painted with a brush that maybe isn't fair to you guys?
Yeah, it's definitely something that it kind of motivates us, because we want to do differently, right? We want to, like, focus on things that people a lot of times are not thinking. A lot of times they're just thinking about the shiny side. They think they are the man. So it's very selfish. Like, the model tends to be very selfish. Oh, there's this guy there. He's God. He does whatever he wants, and we just listen. But what we try to do is just, like, we try to build each other, you know? Like, I think that's the way to go. And when we build each other, we also try to hold each other accountable of our actions, of how we behave. And I think that's the way to go. As far as, like, in, if you're in a leadership position, you got to lead by example. Even more or something, like, so close, like, jiu-jitsu. If you behave a certain way, like, they can tell right away. Because you start training, you build the sensibility, right? You know, like, oh, what's wrong? What's the energy? Like, you can easily tell. So you have to be consistently remind yourself, you know, like, you have to lead by example. And I believe that, you know, if you're able to express the values, what you stand for, eventually that will bring the right people in. A lot of times it won't, but they get filtered out by the culture. I think that I'm a big believer in that, you know. And it's cool to see, man, like, the growth as well. I think you just mentioned Arash. You know, he's always been great, but I think, like, throughout the years, he's grown so much more outside of the match too. Now he's a leader because whenever he started, he used to be the assistant, right? Yeah. Now if you walk in, he changed.
Yeah.
He's the guy now. You can definitely tell, like, the way that he coordinates the room, how he treats also the people underneath him.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been to a class where Camden is there.
Yeah.
Like, he's building Camden, you can definitely see the passion. You know? So it's cool to see that process going over and over. And then a few years will be Camden, where Arash is building someone after him. So I really believe in that. And I think that makes it a really genuine experience whenever a parent comes in, they can see that everybody, you know, is working to make each other better.
Yeah. No, the one thing I told Arash is finally the outside looks like what we saw on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you know, when he came, he was pretty out of shape. Mm-hmm. And I think he, like, there was a certain, a little bit of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, me talking to him, like, no, we're going to trim you up and you got to lose some weight and, like, you got to do this. And he was like, I'm in. And it's nice. I saw him come in. He had his beard all done, hair up. And I was like, look at you. I was like, you your 30-year-old glow up.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I think the weight of finally getting the black belt, I think, was also a big lift for him too.
And I think that it's cool when I think you gave him a lot of your time and energy, right? But if you see, he's trying to also pass that to people. Like, I've seen countless of times he's trying to bring people to work out. He's trying to have people be more healthy, like trying to have people start training. So I think, as someone that's giving the time, it's way more fulfilling when you see that person trying to, like, pass that knowledge over, trying to encourage more people to, you know, like, take care of themselves.
Well, that's martial arts.
Yeah.
So the one thing which I appreciate what you guys are doing at the Flow Institute, which I feel like, jiu-jitsu and martial arts got hijacked a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, no shade on, like, Craig Jones, who probably is one of the funniest people I've ever had the pleasure of even viewing and meeting. But there's also this idea where, you know, this is a sport. It's not really this. And I think what those guys kind of forget a little bit is that there's parents that bring their kids there in white geese and are, like, bringing jiu-jitsu and are hoping for something, like, a little structure like I had when I did martial arts. Like, when I did, when I was six and I went to martial arts, it was all wooden floors. You know, we had to do these, like, knuckle push-ups and, like, hold a horse stance, and the dude would come around and smack us with sticks. And it was like we had to kneel, you know, like, while somebody was doing something, you had to kneel on this hardwood floor. I mean, it was very structured, and, like, if you fucked around, the dude was on your ass. Mm-hmm. So like there was a lot of discipline with it. And I think that that was good. And I remember coming home telling my mom, I'm like, you know, he beats us with sticks. And my mom's like, yeah, it's martial, it's karate. Mm-hmm. You watch that Kung Fu theater. Yeah, you watch that Kung Fu theater. Like, they're not nice to them. What did you expect? He was going to be nice to you? And I was like, oh, I guess. Whereas, you know, and I think what you guys have done a good job at, you know, with the Six Blades and like the Flow Institute, like bringing those kids there and making them good humans. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like a lot of the people, and, you know, whether it be, you know, like Craig and Gordon and these guys got so far into this kind of no-gi thing, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden they forgot who their base was, which is a bunch of little kids wearing white outfits that are looking to try to get better, and with a bunch of parents watching them, hoping that their kids become the best version of themselves.
Yeah. As it grows, right, I think it gets so polarized. Some people, they're going to attract themselves more to one part of the whole thing, right? Some people, they're fully focused on competition. But then I know also people that are fully focused on competition that never want anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this is your full focus, and, you know, even delivering that.
Yeah.
But with us, we try to, we do competition. Like, Philippe competes, like I compete, other guys compete at the highest level. But then we're also trying to, you know, give that experience to the kids, because we believe there is a great value on that for their life, you know? So trying to excel at all those things at the same time. And the one thing lately that we've been trying to work the most and trying to, you know, craft the message is the importance of the fundamentals. I think nowadays in jiu-jitsu, there's such a big, like, thirst for the trend. They want to know what's the new movement. Mm-hmm. They want to know what's the new technique. And everybody's just obsessed with techniques. I call it technique merchants. They're just selling techniques. Oh, you didn't learn my techniques? I have a bunch of techniques here. Mm-hmm. Which one do you want to buy? But there's so much more than just techniques. There's a community. There's a structure side for kids. There's a discipline. I think it goes way beyond that. So that's why we're trying to, you know, focus lately with the staff and everybody, because I feel a lot of people are getting lost on those like techniques things. When I think the techniques that matter the most is the foundational stuff, the stuff that if you go to a Shanji class, you're going to get it right away. So I believe that's where it all at. If you don't have the foundational, all that trend won't work.
Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.
Yeah. That's it. The big, if you want to see the proof, just look at Shanji competing at the highest level for 20 years. Does he do anything fancy? It is kind of fancy, but it's the basics. Yeah. You know, it's just the basics at the highest level. So I think that's like the thing that I've been trying to focus on lately as far as like passing down the message to the students and stuff.
When, you know, Shanji fought recently, and I told him, I'm like, I think the jiu-jitsu's changed.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, these guys aren't trying to pass your guard. They're not trying to do this. And so it's pretty interesting that I was like, you know, I think that this thing has become gamified a lot. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to figure out the game, because I don't think these guys are going to do it like you thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so
there is like two things I feel that what Victor is saying. In Brazil, whenever I start training, we would always be like helping each other. You know, the community of jiu-jitsu was really small, but was really like together, you know, was really unique fight. And I feel that as jiu-jitsu starts to grow in my city, people start to changing a lot, you know? So I feel that whenever we start to move here and try to be something bigger, we always thinking about like, oh, I'm not going to do by myself, right? So I need a group of people side by side me. I need someone that is going to spread the word, you know? And I feel that that's what beautiful about jiu-jitsu, because a lot of, how you said, a lot of athletes tend to be selfish, you know? And actually, like, I never heard that in my whole life training jiu-jitsu whenever I was in Brazil. And then I remember that I heard that for the first time, like, oh, if you're an athlete, you need to be selfish, you know? And I kind of didn't understand that at first, you know?
There's a negative connotation with the word selfish. Mm-hmm. But I told both of you guys this, that as a professional athlete doing what you're doing, it's okay to be selfish. Mm-hmm. Like if you need to sleep, sleep. If you
priorities,
right? Yeah. Well, it's just,
yeah, I think that's
putting yourself first.
That's the right word.
You know? I use the word selfish. So when I played in the NFL, I wasn't married and have kids because I wanted to be selfish. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely difficult to be selfish when you're a husband and you're a father and there's a million 100%. Other things to do. Mm-hmm. Like if I wanted to train, I wanted to train. If I wanted to sleep, if I wanted to go away for a weekend, if I wanted to do something, I just did it. I didn't want to ask anybody's permission. Mm-hmm. And I think like that level, and God, I can't remember his name, but I've been going to PT for my knee surgery, and the kid, I forgot his name. It's fucking, it's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, the receiver from
Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, Garrett Wilson. He's a receiver for the Jets. Mm-hmm. He's like 25. I mean, he's a fucking really good player. And I'm thinking I'm going to get him on the podcast too. So we were kind of rapping a little bit, and I kind of explained it to him, that mindset. And he's like, man, like, I understand that. Like, you know, because he does, and he has a girlfriend. He's not married. And we were kind of going through it. And I'm like, you know what? Like, you know, once you kind of like, and you know this as you're married, and, you know, at some point you have to, like, when you get married, you got to negotiate stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, no longer is it like, hey, I'm going to go do this. Like, what are we going to do? And then when you add kids into the mix, it's even more. So I told him, I'm like, you know, you have a very small window to be able to do this. Like, yeah. Make sure that you're not throwing too much on or more than you can handle. And it's okay to be a little selfish. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like I do a lot of consults for our annual deal. You know, people sign up for the annual and we give them consults. And so I do anywhere from 3 to 5 a day. And yesterday I talked to a guy who was like, I got a wife, I got a kids. And I got, I think he has a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old. And he was giving me all these things. And he's like, you know, I feel like if I can't do the training as it's written, that I shouldn't do it. And I was mm-hmm. like, let me give you a license to, like, fucking just do what you can. Mm-hmm. And we went through all this thing. And I think sometimes people need, like, just the permission to do these things, because yeah. there's a negative connotation around it. Like, you never need permission to be a good person. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes for you guys, and something that I hopefully instilled in you guys, if, like, you're tired, rest. If you're hungry, eat. Like, don't mm-hmm. feel that you have to extend yourself too far. And one of the things which is difficult, especially when you start a business and are doing these things, like, sometimes you get extended and you're like, fuck, man, I still yeah. got to go out and compete. And, yeah. and you guys have that prime. Like, you got your whole life mm-hmm. ahead of you. Yeah. So, like, you know, if you have to, and I think what's been great with Steve and the flow is that they've given you enough, you know, time to be a little bit selfish and not really push you in that way.
Yeah.
But you're also, you know, I know you don't take a lot of that either. You know, you still show up and teach.
And coach, also what you said about the jiu-jitsu, how the competition changed. It's like, man, I feel that a lot of times today, whenever I watch jiu-jitsu tournaments, people play a lot by the rule set. You know, like if they are fighting IBJJF, they want to win by one advantage. You know, yeah. it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to fight Victor. Man, I know that Victor is really good. He's been in a game for a while. But if I can score one advantage and hold him for like 9 minutes, I will do so. You know?
You mean they just started watching Cyborg? So my exposure to jiu-jitsu is very like recent. But I'll tell you, since I started watching at that first ADCC, which was in 2022, in the last 4 years, mm-hmm. right? Like, the jiu-jitsu's changed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, seeing that initial one and how dudes were attacking and trying to pass. And now I feel like dudes are just kind of stalling and waiting for like one opportunity to try to get an advantage.
Yeah, for sure. And then the funniest thing is that people keep asking, like, oh, what's the best rule set? What do you like to fight? And I'm like, man, like, any rule set, I just want to fight, you know, like,
as long as I can get going, right?
Yes. Like, I don't think about like, oh, I need to stall, I need to win. For sure, I'm going to learn about the rule set. I don't want to be stupid and go there and get played by one guy, you know?
Sure.
But whenever I go out there, my mindset's kind of like, oh, I want to pass his guard and submit to him. You know, I don't go there like, oh, I want to score one advantage and win, you know? Sometimes for sure that end up happen whenever like both people are high level, you see that a lot of fights go by one advantage or 2 points, you know? But I feel that if that mindset could kept going, back in the day, people were not thinking about scoring one advantage. Like, if you watch fights yeah. of Shanji's, like, generation, they were going to kill each other, you know? And I feel that that lost a lot in this generation. People yeah. worry too much about the rule set, you know?
Well, I'd still have to laugh at you fighting in Russia, where all of a sudden that guy like stuck his foot in your armpit, and you were like, looked around, it was like nobody was more shocked, and you like jumped back and fucking heel hooked the dude.
That was my first heel hook in a while. I think I never got a heel hook since
Brown. I don't know who was more surprised by it, the guy or you.
Yeah,
it
was surprised.
Was cool. Yeah, it was like the dude, like, all of a sudden, he wasn't expecting it. And literally stuck his foot right in your armpit. And you were like, oh, wait, hold on. This guy's about his fucking leg broken.
Was that the furthest you ever competed from home?
Ooh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Because I feel that the only place that I competed outside of Brazil was Portugal and here in the US, right? It was really cool to go all the way to Russia and fight. But right now, I think this year, that's one of my goals. The next few years, I want to compete more outside of the US too, you know?
Well, you're the champion now, right? For the tournament
in
Russia.
So let's defend the title now.
Who's the belt?
Yeah. So now you got to go back and defend it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon.
So ADCC 2026 is coming up in Poland.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah.
So you already punched your ticket, and so you're getting invited back.
Just waiting for them to confirm, but yeah, should be good to go.
And then what about, you going to get a glory ticket? Or are they going to reach out and kind of?
I'm not sure, dude. Like, I'm not planning on doing trials now.
Yeah.
It's not because I feel like I'm too good to do trials. It's just like timing is not going to work out for me, I think, because I have a lot, you know, the TFI stuff, you know, we're growing on that side too. And sometimes you have matches, I have seminars. So I think the dates are not going to work out for me to the trials. So hopefully somebody breaks their toe and they call me, or hopefully I get an invite right away. But whatever happens, I'll definitely be happy to be part of it, because I know Felipe is doing it.
Yeah,
I know Lovato is doing it. No, I'm just joking. No, no.
Well, of course Lovato's
doing it. We don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Oh, come on. You don't think Lovato's in like one more round? He's over there talking to his wife. He's like, this will be the last one until the next one.
Going or not, I'm sure he's going to give us great training.
Yeah.
But whenever August hits, I know the vibe is going to be ADC vibe. So why not do it, right? I definitely want to do it. I think the best guys are going to be there too. Like, it might be a good chance. But the only thing is, like, the preparation will be sick, you know? Like, ADCC, I don't think I haven't had a great preparation yet, because both of the last one I did, which was for Gordon, I was basically injured.
Yeah.
And the one before that, I wasn't going to compete. I got called like the week, like the month off. So I just trained normally. So I never had really like a full ADCC camp. So if I actually do this one, I want to make sure that me and Philippe get a good preparation, because I would think that is the most time competition that there is, because the matches are long, super hard to score, almost impossible to score if the guy's not trying to score. The mats are the longest that you have, and it's just so many matches. So you got to be like really like, I think it's the one that you got to go deeper onto the whole preparation. Super fights, I think that's like, the depending on who you're facing too, but you can only prepare so much for super fight. It almost like makes sense for you to prepare so much, because you could be studying, but for ADCC, you probably got to like dig that hole really deep, because you don't know what could happen, right?
Who, Philippe's, you know, weight class is stacked. Like, who is really the top ultra? I mean, there really aren't that many. I mean, and I know the weight class ultra now is anybody over 100 kilos.
It really depends. But last year, the finals were
Panda and Luke. Yeah, but like, I mean, there's really like...
You have to find 16 of them? Yeah, 16 of them is hard.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's really... I mean, I was trying to think of like who would be over 250, 260, 270 pounds. I mean, I know...
I'm definitely on the bigger side of it. The guys that fight heavyweight, a lot of times they're like 230, 240.
Like, because Big Dan's a big dude, but...
Yeah, he's probably the biggest guy.
But I think he's dealing with a bunch of illness stuff.
He's getting back to it now, but yeah, he's slowly... But he has time to prepare. Yeah. Like, he just had a match this weekend.
Yeah, he was down in Brazil, and he looked like whatever sickness or whatever he was dealing with. I think it was like
blood infection, something.
Yeah,
I
forgot the deal with like the deal with Jacob. What's the deal where you get bit by the deer tick and you get
Lyme disease?
Yeah, Lyme disease. Yeah, it was bad Lyme. Yeah, all of a sudden he just looked gassed.
Makes me not want to go hunting.
Well, so that Lyme disease thing is, I mean, it's ticks. So you just got to make sure you're, you know, and it's funny, I was down in the creek and I'm like, God damn, I don't want to get any leeches or weird shit around here. Like, look around and see like a water moccasin coming at me. So what do you think 2026 has in store for both of you guys? Is there anything that you want to accomplish personally, or like, what would really be the capstone for 2026 for you to look back? And like, if, you know, we're doing this podcast again next year in 2027, like looking back, like, what do you think? I mean, 2025, you got married. You know, there's some big things. I mean, I know for you, you got a chance to fight in Russia. Like, what do you want to accomplish in 2026 that we can kind of throw a stake in the ground on?
I feel that, man, this year I'm trying to improve a lot, like getting the best version of myself outside of the mats too, you know? And I feel that that's something that I've been trying to accomplish by studying more and like developing other sites. But I feel that in the competition side of it, ATC would be the main goal for this year. You know, I want to actually start training more wrestling, get more well prepared, because right now everyone like in my division, everyone's staying on their feet. So I don't feel that no one's going to pull guard. And I don't want to be the one pulling guard and trying to sweep people. I want to be the one trying to take them down, you know. So that's something that I've been trying to plan better and coordinate better. But ATC would be the main goal for me. But I also want to throw some fights in the gi, you know. So the Worlds this year, get some momentum going, you know. And yeah, I would say that ATC is the biggest goal for the year.
For me, I think it's like growth and trying to enjoy the process. Growth in different areas. Philippe touched a couple of areas, I think, intellectually and also like physically, like make sure I can be in great shape intellectually. I think on the side of like being a good leader, you know, like over the past year, we now have more people under the TFI umbrella. So how can I, you know, serve them better and stuff like that. And on the competition side, it's an exciting year because there's the ADCC year. It's a, you know, amazing championship. Winning that would mean a lot. Like we talked about it.
Yeah.
But more than that, just like making sure that physically I can handle the camp well and I can show up in a good, my best version for that tournament. And yeah, like this past year was really cool. Like it's really cool with Jiu-Jitsu now because each year you don't know what's going to happen, right? Last year, everybody was like, whoa, what are you going to do? Are you going to do CGI? I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't even know what CGI is going to be about. And then it was a teams tournament.
Yeah.
And then we won hella money. It was good. But then this year there's ADCC and then we don't know what the super fights are. Currently, I don't really care about that, but it's like, I mean, on third on the ranks, the guy who's on top is Luke and Pena is there. So I would also like,
Are you third in the ranking?
I'm third. I'm below Luke and Fana.
You know, that fucking, I'm still pissed off about that fight that was at Kandahari. You whooped that dude's ass for like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And like, you were basically trying to squeeze his head like a fucking grape.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden he ends up on top.
Yeah.
And
it was half and half.
Right? And it was half and half. And yeah, then they gave him the decision. And I was telling him, I told Philippe this, nothing has fucking angered me more than people winning by a very slim margin decision and not submitting the guy and then acting like they just won the World fucking Series.
Yeah.
He's over there putting the crown on and trying to do all this shit. And I'm like, yeah, are you out of your fucking mind? You get your ass rolled up for 8 minutes and then just happen to get back on top. Didn't submit the dude, didn't score a point, didn't get an advantage, didn't even pass his guard, didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And now you're acting like because some guy fucking raised your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, dude, like there's an old adage in boxing. Like if you're going to beat the champ, you got to knock people out. Mm-hmm. I think in jiu-jitsu, like I know they have to have winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't submit the guy or you don't get a point and some, you know, innocuous referee gives you just the win, I would say, you know, thank you very much. But, you know, I'd say,
let's do it again.
Yeah. Well, like I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to get the win, but let's do it again until somebody gets this thing submitted.
Yeah.
And I think what's frustrating for a lot of people, especially as spectators, is they see this and they're like, there's no clear defined winner. How are these guys picking?
Mm-hmm.
And like that thing with Luke actually drew me fucking crazy. And I think he actually came over and apologized for acting, you know, like acting a fool.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he was just excited for it. It was his biggest win. Actually, he had
to be kind of. It's not really a win.
Yeah, he didn't tap me out. But it was cool to see how good he did against Pena because it proved that he's on that level, right? Yeah. So I think winning against him now will mean way more than winning against him then.
Because
with me, he came as a big underdog, right? So he got the victory, fine. And then he fought Pena. He submitted Pena, what, in 1 minute?
Yeah.
Now, like, he's a champion. So I think beating him now would actually mean way more than back then.
Yeah.
And that's why usually, that's the way I am with, like, the. I remember one day this guy asked me, like, if you have to go back and change a result of a match, which result would you change? I'm like, none. Because that's what pushes me to be here today. You know, I can't change the past. I can just change my present. And that will influence on the future. So I can just get better. I can just work on different things. But yeah, like I think get to face those guys this year will be good. The championships, the growth, a lot of people coming under the TFI umbrella. And yeah, man, just get better. And funny enough, like this will be my last year in the 20s. So I want to make sure that, you know, it's a good year.
So what happens after 20 when you go to 30? Are you become is that a master's or something or?
I could compete as a master. I still want to compete as an adult, but I just think it's pretty crazy that I'm going to be 30 next year.
Fuck. Look how old you are. You fucking old man.
Man, I can't imagine myself out there coaching Victor World Masters. You know?
I'm going to compete this year. I'm going to compete World Master.
I personally...
I'm going to dye my hair white.
Personally, I'm disappointed that Gordon hung it up. I would have liked to have seen you get an opportunity.
I don't think he hung it up. I think he's... he's done that before. That type of post is all the time. Not respecting him, of course, he hang up or whatever. But I think he's coming back whenever he feels better.
Yeah.
But posting that, it just gives him time to work whenever he needs to work on. Yeah. Whenever he's ready to come back, he can come back, you know. But not doing that, people are going to be asking, are you competing in DCC?
Sure.
Are you doing the super fight? So doing that, he's just buying himself time so he can treat, like, work on the things that go on. But if he gets healthy, I think he gets back to compete, you know.
Man,
but it is unfortunate
because the level of sickness that he's had for as long as he has. Yeah. So, I mean, what's fascinating with like autoimmune disease and sickness like that, the longer it goes on, the more difficult it is to kind of
climb back.
Yeah. Yeah. To get, because your immune system becomes so weak. Like he's had like such a wrecked stomach for so long that to be able to pull a lever to be able to fix that is going to require something a little bit more, like, you know, fecal transplants or really just some really.
I was going to say, through the past year or so, you made friends with the doctor. You probably learned more about how important the stomach is for us, right? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, you know, you guys.
It's part in digestion, food, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the microbiome is pretty fascinating. I mean, we've had, you know, we'll link the podcast with Sabine Hazen, but I didn't realize at all how ignorant I was about the microbiome, because I always thought it was just about the food we eat. I didn't realize it was the environment, it was the people. Mm-hmm. And I think I told you guys when I went and got my gut biome tested, I had bacteria from the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And she was like, how the fuck do you have this? And I'm like, fucking Shanji and the boys. And so like I had like three different strains that were unique to Brazil, because she had gone down and done the Doctors Beyond Borders.
The more variety you have, the better it is?
Yes.
Or
better. Yeah, so my diversity was in the eights, which is like pretty like very, very high for the U.S. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like most people here are in the fours and the fives. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that
imagine if you just eat McDonald's your whole life.
Yeah. Well, I can only imagine. So my whole thing for it was I wanted to make sure that I was healthy enough that if I actually went to the Amazon, if we went to Manaus, we went to the Amazon, that we would not have any issues. Because mm-hmm. if your gut has like low diversity and you don't have these microbes,
can you really feel it?
Well, you would go there and you get sick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's like, there's people here in the U.S. that if they travel to the Amazon would literally probably have dysentery.
So you have what they call a stomach of steel.
Yeah. So I asked her, I was like, if we go, but that's a big thing too. It's not only the soil that you're in, but that your interaction with the soil, the people you're around, and the food you eat. So it's multifaceted.
But man, the craziest thing is that every single time that I go to Brazil, the food's so good and I eat so much and I always get a stomachache, you know? It's always like bothering me.
Well, yeah, but that's a stomachache from eating too much. It's not as all of a sudden you eat a little bit and all of a sudden it goes. We were in, when we went to Carnival, we were in Rio and those guys set up those little barbecues on the side. Like they cooked the street meat.
Oh my God.
And we got pretty drunk and ate like a ton of these shish kebabs. Yeah. And I was like, man, what are the chances that was anything that we thought it was?
In Brazil, call it the... cat.
Yeah, I was going to say that was
cat's curse.
That's
it's not really a cat. Well, sometimes it could be, but
it could have been pigeon. It could have been anything. And like nobody got sick. And I was like, oh, that was a good one.
I had a friend that every single time that we used to go to this place, he would be looking around to see if he sees any cat clothes. You know, if there is no cat, that's a problem. You know,
so they're cooking all them.
Not a street cat.
When I was in Berkeley, there was a place called Steve's Korean Barbecue, and there was never any pigeons around there, and there was pigeons all over Berkeley. And our joke was that they used to kill the pigeons and feed them, and like you put enough hot sauce on it, it tastes fine.
It tastes fine.
The other one I'd love to see you get back is I'm interested to see how Marigali does.
Oh yeah,
coming back from his injury, because that would be a nice one to roll back. I think this Pixie one's going to be good, so I'm excited to see you kind of be able to get some chances to go back at some of these guys and you know, and maybe get a little bit of redemption. I mean, I know that Grand Prix shootout that you did with Marigali, that was I mean.
And you guys never fought Nogi, right?
No, we never faced out a Nogi. No. And yeah, it'll be a cool one.
Well, that one was totally like I put on me for the mere fact that like you blasted through your fucking warm-up rounds.
Yeah,
like you submitted these dudes.
One of my problems were actually matches.
Well, no, yeah, you did these like matches. I actually
competed against a world champion in the second round.
Yeah, and you like submitted these guys in like 34 seconds. Mm-hmm, yeah, and I'm like, dude, and you were completely dry. He actually got matches and was like, it took you like 7 minutes to get warmed up. Mm-hmm. And that was when I realized, I was like, oh shit, man, we didn't do enough, you know, to get you like sweaty enough and get you into the conditioning phase. So, I mean, that was a... That was a big learning for me on that one. But no, I'd love to see you roll some of those back. What I'd like to see for you is I'd like to see your prickliness and your pettiness that extends from the training hall onto the fucking mats.
Okay.
I feel like your level of pettiness and just fucking prickliness that you are in training? Like, how do we get that on game day?
I think it has been changing, you know. You've been saying so much in the last few days.
This is what I do. I talk shit to him nonstop.
Exactly. And right lately,
I think he's mishearing you because he's doing that in training still with me.
Oh,
no, I was joking.
lately, it's just me and coach in the training room, like lifting weights, and he's been just like blah blah blah, 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 blah little by little, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's getting to my head because I feel that one thing that I think I change a lot is I'm using the train to train, you know. So I've been trying to work a lot on my bad sides of things, you know. And then for sure, like, I'm getting beat up by a lot of people, but it actually feels good, you know, because I feel that I've been improving a lot, you know. So that is feeling good. And yeah, I can't wait right now to fight, you know, like be back to the gi. I'm really excited for this one on Saturday because I feel that a tournament too, it's also the time that I see all my friends, you know. Everyone is together and everyone is watching. And like, it's whenever we really feel like the team's together, you know. So I'm really excited to this one. And also, yeah, like IBJJF fight, a lot of fights this week, you know. Let's do it. Yeah.
I think for Philippe, for DCC, the main thing that I took from last time, which is I think is really important for fighting, is your stature and your body build for divisions. Him at the 88 division, he looked pretty big for it. So I think that was a big like win you found, and be able to compete at that weight and actually perform well. Because you look so much bigger than the guys. Even you imagine Giancarlo, he's a big guy, like not big, he's kind of short, he's stocky, but you have so much more length and he can create way more power.
He's got like long arms.
Yeah, he has long arms, he's a bit shorter, right?
Yeah, he's short.
Philippe has long arms and he's taller too, so I think it was cool to see
using
your size.
I was standing right there when that dude fucking broke your ankle.
Oh,
yeah, and when he got you in that heel hook, and he got you in that foothold, and I know your ankle broke because I fucking heard it, and you were like not fucking tapping, and then you smacked him. It was fucking great, dude. I was like, I saw him twist you, and I'm like, and the dude was even looking around and like didn't see the tap, and like at that point he had nowhere else to go. He had to kind of break from it. That was huge, man. Like a lot of people would have like tapped, and I remember you were like, I'm not doing it. That was great, dude. I'm so, you know, it was awesome to see.
How about you? What's your goal in Jiu-Jitsu 2026?
I want to get this knee less swelling. I was kind of like excited to come back, and then I banged it and it swole up on me. So as soon as this thing gets done, then I can basically retire from my life and just become a professional Jiu-Jitsu guy and just travel with McPhee around and just do stuff.
There you go.
What I'm trying to figure out is how Lovato is slowing time down to be able to do all that he does.
Yeah.
Lovato's like,
he's in college now.
It's unbelievable. I'm like, God damn, I need to figure out this Lovato thing better, how he's doing it. But no, I would like to be, it's been a lot of fun to go see Cashy train. I thank you for rolling with him the other day in front of the class. Like that was, so all of a sudden Arash put like a comp thing together and he's like, Cash, you're up. And he was like looking around and he's like, against Victor. And like all of a sudden, like everybody laughed.
Nervous.
Yeah, he was super nervous, and he thought he was kidding. And then Victor walked out, and they actually did a round. And then they ended it, and I was like, "And Cashy, I was like, how'd you do?" He's like, "I think it did pretty good." He's like, "I think I could take him." And like I was like looking at him, I laughed, and I was like, "Are you serious?" He's like, "Yeah, I think so." And I was like, "Do you think he was trying hard?" He's like, "I know he was taking it easy, but I think I was going to get him." he's such a good kid.
It was great too because he beat me. It was points, but the match ended. He looked at me and was like, "Hey man, good job."
He should. And then the kids are like, "I think Cash beat him 16-14." And I'm like, "I don't know how these
points." We made it really like the idea was like make it really confusing for the kids to count the points, and I didn't even know the score. But it was great too because. Funny, but
Victor's like, I didn't know they scored. I should have won.
And then Cashy's move is he just jumps on your back and he tries to just fucking choke the shit out of you, which he does to me.
He almost had me, But the cool thing was like for the kids to see that you can be a good sport when you win too, right? He stand up. I think the competition experience you try to build is mainly that because the thing you said is really common, that you get competitive in a sport and you start going to the side where you're not really a nice person. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to open way more doors if you can be competitive, but you can shift that and be a good sport about things too, right? Like yeah. about all those things too. So it was cool for the kids to see him beating me and say, hey man, good job, encourage me after.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun to see the kids and like to see how happy and excited they are. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is like your guys' energy and how you guys treat them. And like it's endearing and it's really nice as a parent to see. But also it's a lot of fun to see everybody kind of progressing and like see everybody get better. So I'm super bummed that I've missed, but hopefully I get back sooner and I can get the swelling out of my knee. But yeah, I fucking banged it and it just swells up, which I was kind of nervous that if I got into class and banged it and it swelled up, if that would bum me out. So yeah. Hopefully it gets a little bit better.
You have access to, you know, some people that can buy you some time back.
Yeah.
We get you back whenever you're ready.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. But I'm really excited for ADCC. I'm pumped to go.
You're going, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Nice. You think I'm going to fucking miss this?
Yeah.
Like we reserved for the lesson.
John's going to do the Masters Open.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I old Polish
guy.
I just want to show up with
Master. Yeah.
So right, there, when we went to the Olympia years ago, there's a Puerto Rican bodybuilder, like fitness girl named Yarnisha.
Mm-hmm.
And her entire fan base had like these airbrush shirts of her on there. And I was thinking what we do is we could just get like airbrush shirts of a Philippe's face on there.
Bald with her.
Yeah. Well, so what did you guys do? You guys shaved the head in solidarity with Shanji? Was that why you did it?
Team bonding, as Philippe said. Just team bonding. Like,
well, you guys actually have pretty good round heads.
Yeah.
So you guys can actually get away with it. The problem is if you have a weird shaped head, it looks fucking awful. Like if you got like a weird cone head, that's a bad one.
Yeah, it looked like an egg.
Yeah, I've seen people shave their heads and I'm like, ooh, it's a bad deal. Don't do that. Yeah. So, well, all right. Well, I'm excited for 2026. Thanks so much for being on Power Athlete Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales you've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you pushing through performance roadblocks caused by pain or janky movement mechanics? Knock the rust off with our movement health courses used by thousands of athletes worldwide, from average Joes to MVPs. Our courses give you the tools to assess and fix yourself so you can get back to breaking necks and cashing checks. Not convinced? Get a taste of how our courses can help you by enrolling in a free sample today. Head to powerathletehq.com and search courses from the menu. Now back to the show.